It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
And a drive to right. Gone! The season has begun.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Rameen on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
It's hour number two on a Tuesday, May 19th edition of Overtime. Welcome back to the show. Stay tuned later this week. Your fill of Chiefs talk, Broncos talk, as we recap the NFL draft from a Kansas City and Denver perspective. Talk about the headlines and storylines heading into the long offseason, summertime in the National Football League before we get to training camp in the month of August, preseason, regular season, right around the corner, I promise, as we make our way through the month of May. Very excited for the rest of the week as we tell you about the rest of the show. NHL Final Four officially set. We got Buffalo, we got Carolina in the East, and in the West, we got Vegas and Colorado. Great, worthy Final Four the rest of the way. A look at the odds and storylines that follow coming up here soon. Also, the good, the bad, the ugly. Before we finish up the show, talking Wild and Timberwolves with Darren Wolfson of KSTP in the Twin Cities. That'll be the remainder of this Tuesday edition of Overtime. Well, the remainder of the game last night, San Antonio and OKC, double overtime in game one. Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs had control until they didn't. OKC wouldn't quit. Spurs came on back. And in the overtime period was the play of the day, play of the night, and maybe a play we're going to remember for a very long time. Spurs down three, 30 seconds to go, and a seven-footer, more like a seven-and-a-half-footer, putting up a three from absurdly far downtown.
Spurs got numbers hungry now behind the plate. Five on four. Wemby's going to pull a deep three.
Oh, oh, oh my goodness. Oh, a logo shot.
28-footer. Ties it at 108.
28-footer. May have been a little further than that. He caught the edge of the logo on his way in. OKC, the home team, the losing team in game one. Victor Wembanyama, 41 points, 24 rebounds, 3 blocks. Dylan Harper, fantastic. 24-11-6. And a 61-40 rebounding margin for San Antonio in the game one win on the road, 122-115 in double overtime. You know, the coach gets to see this every day. What did he think of Wemby's shot and Wemby's performance last night? Here's Mitch Johnson of the Spurs.
I thought his level of physicality and execution through physicality was tremendous. His rebounding obviously shows itself in the box score, but was off the charts defensively. He was in a stance almost all night, and I thought he did a good job of, and the guys along with him, just being stubborn in terms of they made some shots, and they did, obviously, you got to give up something when you try to take things away, and at times when they made shots or they made us pay for whatever we were trying to do, we stuck with it. And he led the way. I mean, that's 49 big minutes, and it was high level for the majority of those.
High level indeed. Wembanyama, 41-24. Dylan Harper, big stat line, 122-115, the final. Mike Wilbon took notice last night the way that the other superstar athletes out there on the floor look at Victor Wembanyama when he pulls off what he pulls off last night.
When those players on his own team were staring at him in awe late in the game, that clip where he's looking at them and they're all looking back at him. Do you know how many people get that in the history of basketball? It's a real small number, and there's some great players who never got that. It looks like something otherworldly that possesses him now. We're not talking about, it's one of the great games of all time, but the performance, I'm looking at it, and when I'm texting you, it reminds me of things I'd seen in my life, sitting at ring side watching a young Mike Tyson, standing and watching behind the ropes and watching a young Tiger Woods. It reminds me of that, where everyone is in awe of everything he's doing, including the opposition. They don't want to tell you that.
That's Mike Wilbon. Great stuff there, but he's right. I mean, if you think about being a kid and going to any sporting event, even a high school football game, when you're in grade school, you look up at those kids, you look up at those athletes and say, my goodness, look at how big that guy is. Look at the play he made. He's a hero. I can't wait to be even in that same breath or be out there on the football field someday. If your teammates are looking at you in the NBA that way, think you're doing some pretty absurd stuff, and that is absolutely what Wemby is up to these days. More from Will Bond is talking about Wembanyama and how he might just be different from everybody else.
All year long, I thought and admired the defending champs for playing with a quiet, like a polite ruthlessness. I don't mean an individual, just the team. But Wemby personifies that. He is ruthless. There's a pettiness about it, which is necessary. And maybe that loss hurt him so deeply that he, and this goes back, if we're going to talk about historical comparisons with Russell and Bird and Jordan and Magic and Kobe, they looked at teammates in the locker room. I know this. They looked at guys and said, no, no, you're doing this. Oh, we will fight. Wemby seems to have that gene. I don't care what else the rest of you are doing. I'm not having this disappointment. So maybe that reference would be put to bed. I've been saying it's Russell, it's Magic, it's Tim Duncan. That's the list. Everybody else, Kobe, Shaq, Jordan, LeBron, it took years. Jerry West, it took his whole life. This dude, maybe he's cut from different cloth.
I think so. Mike Wilbon, great point there on Victor Wembanyama. 41 points, 24 rebounds, 3 blocks in the game one. Double overtime win. Your final score again, 122-115. Vegas is always sharp on the odds, cutting edge of the news line as well. They still think OKC the better team and still favored to win the series. But Victor Wembanyama certainly gives the Spurs a really good chance. Here's Brian Windhorst on if he sees any team beating Wemby in 6 or 7 games.
I have this ironclad rule that I've developed over the years where I do not, no matter what, ever overreact to game one of a playoff series. I am having a real test of that because I'm not sure how you're going to beat him 4 out of 7. I'm talking about Victor. I don't know how you're going to get 4 from him. I'm not going to violate my rule, but I'm watching what went down last night. Stephon Castle had 11 turnovers in the game. They were down 3, and the Oklahoma City Thunder, the closers of all closers, had the ball. Victor could barely run, and they won. Because he hit a 30-footer. So I'm just saying, like, even if the Thunder had won that game, I'm not sure I would change my mind because they're going to get De'Aaron Fox, I assume, back. Beating him 4 out of 7 is about to be hell for this league.
I hope so. I hope we get a hellaciously good series here between San Antonio and OKC. It does take a little bit of the buzz out of the other series in the East that begins tonight. Cavs and the Knicks from MSG, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Here's more from Wendy. I know Cleveland can plan to slow down Jalen Brunson.
Sometimes the Cavs are very, very good. And man for man, the Cavs are probably more talented than the Celtics. And definitely
that's why I want to know why they aren't better, because they're so good man for man.
Definitely more talented than the 76ers. And their key player isn't Embiid, who's coming off of a lumbering game. And the Cavs have had some success against Jalen Brunson. Now, Brunson could score 40 tonight. I am certainly not saying it, but the Cavs did have some. And the Cavs had success against Cade Cunningham in the regular season. Mm-hmm. The Cavs actually have this guy, Dean Wade, who is 6'10", who they will use as the primary defender on Brunson. When Brunson went up against him this year, Brunson struggled a little bit. And I don't even feel comfortable bringing this up because a regular season game versus now is so different. But Dean Wade at 6'10 is the type of defender you put on Jalen Brunson because the length can sometimes bother him.
Game one of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight. Cavaliers and Knicks, 7 o'clock on ESPN. New York favored by 7.5. Big night in the NBA. Also was a big night in the NHL where we saw a Game 7 take place from Buffalo. Sabres looking to advance for the first time in a long time to the Stanley Cup Final. Montreal wins in overtime. Alex Newhook, a road winner, won't soon be forgotten.
In overtime, that came close to the line, and now Montreal's going to work it out. Carrier ahead. Over the line comes Newhook. Shooting! Scores! Alex Newhook! Olay! 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 And Montreal is going to play Carolina in the Eastern Conference Final.
Great call there. Sportsnet stats on Twitter. Alex Newhook, the netter in overtime. Montreal 3, Buffalo 2 as the Canadiens, the Habitants, moving on to the Eastern Conference Final. Western Conference Finals begin on Wednesday. Golden Knights at the Avs, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Colorado favored -190 on the puck line. Carolina favored a little more at home in Raleigh for game one Thursday night against Montreal, 7 o'clock on TNT. USHL hockey, a reminder, the Stampede took care of business and then some. Game one, game two victories for the Stampede has them on the brink of winning a fourth Clark Cup. Game three coming up on Friday from Muskegon, Michigan against the Lumberjacks, a 6:10 start time. Major League Baseball, AL Central showdown yesterday. Cleveland doubling up and then some against Detroit, 8-2, the final. Guardians win 8-2, they're 27-22. Boston beat Kansas City 3-1. And the Minnesota Twins find a way again to another win. They improved their record to 22-26. It was Kendry Rojas who was really impressive on the mound in a start. Three strikeouts, four innings of work. Here's manager Derek Shelton on the inspiring play of the youngster.
I thought he was outstanding. I mean, you know, the thing we've seen with Kendry is when he puts the ball on the plate, that he causes issues. And I mean, that's an entirely right-handed lineup except for, you know, two guys, and the one guy's a monster in the middle. And I say that affectionately because he may be the best, one of the top three hitters in baseball. I thought he did a really good job navigating. He threw strikes, everything was sharp. You know, didn't know what we were going to get out of him. And the fact that we got four out of him, and he threw, what, 49 pitches? That was really impressive.
Really impressive indeed for Rojas. Again, four innings pitched, one walk, three strikeouts. It was Josh Bell with a big game at the plate. Three of four, two homers and four RBI. Here's manager Derek Shelton on Bell's big game yesterday in a 6-3 win.
Yeah, really good swings. I mean, the first one, you don't see very many guys hit line drives into the you know, flower center field wall, and then to go backside like that, I think we know how strong he is and the ability to impact the baseball. And you know, the one thing about Josh Bell is when he gets hot, he can get really hot quickly. And then another big RBI coming up late, which really good game for him.
Minnesota, a 6-3 winner yesterday. New record is 22-26. Other notables: the Brewers beat the Cubs at Wrigley 9-3. The Rockies win at home 7-6 over the Rangers. White Sox fall in Seattle yesterday 6-1. Today and tonight we'll see the Astros and Twins collide at Target Field. 6:40, the projected start time, 6 o'clock is your pregame coverage right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Over to the National Football League. Just how sure of a thing was it that Aaron Rodgers was coming back to Pittsburgh? Adam Schefter noting, we may have oversold our confidence a bit that this was a done deal because Pittsburgh truly didn't know.
I know everybody expected that he would be back. He was back in Pittsburgh 10 days ago. But I'm just telling you that talking to the organization over the weekend, until the weekend, they didn't know officially. He had not informed them that he would be returning officially until this past weekend. He had not given them an answer. And so until you have an answer, you don't really know. And my guess is that that sort of filtered around the organization. And as great as he is, as much as we think we're going to see him, and as much as everybody believes he's going to play again under his former head coach in Green Bay, he still had not committed to it. And he let all this time go by. So when all that time goes by, you can talk yourself into a lot of different scenarios about whether he is or isn't coming. Like, well, why hasn't he answered? Well, maybe he's not coming back. And I can just tell you that the organization truly did not know that he was coming back until this past weekend.
That's pretty darn surprising because you thought that the confidence in Aaron Rodgers coming back, the confidence of a potential return or a likely return, may have given the Steelers a little bit more credo in what they were doing this offseason, standing by Will Howard, standing by Mason Rudolph, drafting Drew Aller, tearing him down to the studs. And then you get a commitment from Aaron Rodgers. It almost felt like they were making the bed the whole time for a Rodgers return. But apparently, according to Adam Schefter, they were not super confident in that, which should give you a little bit more confidence that maybe Will Howard could be a guy worth a look before too long in the Steel City. Same division, different story. Peter Schrager is on the Cincinnati Bengals train right now and suddenly a big believer in their Super Bowl chops in the AFC.
But just wait for August. This is going to be the trendy pick for a lot of people for Super Bowl out of the AFC. Mm. Not only did they spend the fourth most in the free agent market as any team, which is not Bengals football,
right,
this offseason, they bring back 11 starters on offense for an offense that was high-flying when Burrow was in there. All the turnover within the division, Ravens, Browns, Steelers, all new head coaches. The Bengals seem to be the stable situation, and Burrow being on site there at minicamp, there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about the Bengals.
I agree there's reason to be optimistic about the Bengals. I've just been burned, as you have been burned many times over the last few years. Some of it's been out of their control. The Joe Burrow injuries to the wrist, etc., in recent years have certainly been lackluster, but the contract situations, the lack of investment on the defense, they have got to pay the piper now. And they're going to do that, ponying up big contracts, big money for Jonathan Allen, Dexter Lawrence, Boye Mafe, Brian Cook, Kyle Duggar, Jasir Taylor, and more, all on defense in Cincinnati. They were not bad last year. They were horrifically bad. I don't care what Joe Burrow did offensively. The Bengals were going to lose the game. That's exactly what they did throughout last year. Another slow start, another sluggish stretch, and they missed the playoffs yet again with one of the best quarterbacks in the league, one of the best receivers in the league, if not the best, in Ja'Marr Chase, and then a top-flight wide receiver, too, in T. Higgins. This team is the underachievers all the time in this division. I'm not buying them yet. I don't think they're a Super Bowl favorite. I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender just yet. I need to see them get out to a 4-1 start. Or how about a 3-3 start? That would be amazing. By Bengals standards lately, I'm not buying Cincinnati like Peter Schrager suggested just moments ago. Reminder, in the golf and tennis world, French Open around the corner in the world of tennis. Roland Garros action begins May 23rd, runs through the conclusion of the tournaments on June 7th. The golfing world, PGA Tour, moves to the CJ Cup Byron Nelson this weekend. U.S. Open around the corner mid-June, 18th through the 21st. D1 softball, Nebraska survives their region onto the Super Regional. They host in Lincoln, Oklahoma State, best of three series, Thursday at 8, Friday at 4, Saturday at 4 if necessary for a best of three series. And D2 baseball, we'll be talking with Augie baseball head coach Tim Huber tomorrow on the show as his team pulls the upset, seed upset of Pittsburgh State a couple of times over and make their way to the Super Regional. They begin action on Thursday against Central Missouri, Thursday at 5, Friday at 5, Saturday at 1 o'clock if necessary for Game 3. Follow along at GoAugie.com. That's where you can find this news that Augie pitcher Mariano Gomez has earned another all-region nod, this time as a D2 CCA all-region, all-central region first team honoree. Each of the 16 D2 CCA all-region first team selections will be now listed on the All-America ballot. The senior lefty won the NSIC's Triple Crown, leading the league in ERA, 7-0 record, and 65 strikeouts in conference play. Well-deserved honor there for Mariano Gomez. The Augustana Vikings softball program landed two honorees on the D2 CCA All-Region team. Senior Andrea Kane is an All-Region member for the third time in her storied career, and Desi Cuevas garnered her second honor in just her third season in Sioux Falls. Cuevas has a batting average of .396, an OPS of .1032, recorded 73 hits and 50 runs. The Omaha, Nebraska native had 9 homers and batted at a .609 clip this past season. South Dakota State baseball is getting ready for the Summit League tournament coming up on Wednesday at noon as they'll face off with Oral Roberts, and right-hander Drew McDowell was honored yesterday as the Quick Star Summit League Peak Pitcher of the Week. The sophomore from Billings pitched 6 no-hit innings as part of a combined shutout with Ty Madison as the Jackrabbits opened a 4-game series with a 5-0 victory just last week. McDowell is the third pitcher for the Jackrabbits to receive the weekly award this season, joining Sam Schlecht on March 3rd and Ty Madison on May the 5th. A cherry on top of what was an incredible stretch of softball from the USD Coyotes softball team in the month of May sees the Yotes jump into the Softball America Top 25 mid-major poll for the first time in program history. In a loaded Lincoln Regional that featured 3 top 30 RPI teams, with all 3 nationally ranked heading into the weekend, the Yotes posted a 1-2 record on the weekend. South Dakota picked up their first ever tournament win with a 4-2 victory over Louisville in the first elimination game of the regional, and then, of course, played pretty darn tough against Grand Canyon, coming up a little short in extras. Job well done. Phenomenal season for USD Coyotes softball. Only up from here, as this feels like a program-defining season and victory in the postseason NCAA tournament just over the weekend. Lastly, on the Minnesota Wild, they got a pair of really good goalies, Jesper Wallstedt and Philip Gustafson. And Gustafson will have offseason surgery on his hip, putting his readiness for the beginning of training camp in question. Wild General Manager Bill Guerin said on Monday the procedure would take place, quote, as soon as possible to repair damage from overall wear and tear, not in response to any specific injury that occurred During the playoffs, Gustafson slumped down the stretch of the regular season, was benched for the start of the playoffs when rookie Jesper Wallstedt took over as the number one in the net. Gustafson made one postseason start, a 5-2 loss at Colorado in Game 2 of the second-round series. Avalanche ended up winning against the Wild in five games. Gustafson recently signed a five-year, $34 million contract extension last October that kicks in with the 2026-2027 season and carries a full no-trade clause for the first 2 years. So decisions to be made in the net. Where do they go from here? Two worthy starters, Gustafson and Wallstedt. We'll see exactly what's ahead, but Gustafson going to go under the knife. Off-season surgery on his hip coming up pretty darn soon. Those are your ReliaBank headlines of the day. It's hour number two on a Tuesday edition of Overtime. As always, for a better local banking option, check them out online or in person in the 605 ReliaBank.com. When we come back, we got a lot of good, bad, and ugly storylines to get to. Before we go there, right back into the hockey talk, we got our Final Four set in the NHL, the Vegas Golden Knights, the Colorado Avalanche, Montreal Habitants, Canadiens, and the Carolina Hurricanes. What pick is the one to make? Probably Colorado. We'll dive into the storylines and news ahead in the NHL as the Final Four officially set there. Look at the odds as well as the good, the bad, and the ugly, all before our program-ending conversation centered on the Wild and the Timberwolves and more with Darren Wolfson of KSTP in the Twin Cities. Stick around. Overtime continues after this on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
You want more of Overtime? It's all on the podcast. Free with the app or online at ESPN Sioux Falls. Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Little hockey talk to keep you company midway through the Tuesday edition, hour number two of Overtime, May 19th. And last night we saw a pretty fun series come to a close. Game 7, Overtime. Montreal beat Buffalo 3-2 as the Canadiens, the Habitants, are on to face off with the Carolina Hurricanes in Raleigh. Game 1, Thursday night. Perhaps Alex Newhook should be renamed Mr. Game 7. According to ESPN.com, the Canadiens winger scored the overtime winner against the Sabres on Monday, Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Semis, lifting his club to a 3-2 win and punching a ticket to the Eastern Conference Finals against the Canes. It was the second straight series that Newhook ended in a Game 7 for the Canadiens after pocketing the decisive marker in the final chapter of their first-round triumph against the Lightning. Newhook is now the fourth Montreal player to score a Game 7 overtime winner and the first to do so on the road. Newhook saying it's a crazy feeling, a lot of emotion. It was war all series long, and for it to go to Game 7 and overtime, that's your opportunity. And sometimes it takes just one shot to see across the line, see if you can find the back of the net. It is a great feeling. Took everything we had to get through this series. Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals set for Thursday night, 7 o'clock Central, from Raleigh, North Carolina. On the other end is a disappointed fan base, maybe both, in Buffalo. Let's go Buffalo chants echoed around the arena following the conclusion of Game 7 as the Sabres and Canadiens shook hands following their Eastern Conference semi-series coming to a close. The cheers for the Sabres were not for the reasons fans or the team had hoped, coming at the end of a 3-2 loss in overtime. Instead, they were there to acknowledge a historic campaign that saw the end of a 14-season playoff drought and a team that brought excitement and playoff fever back to a hockey-loving town. A Buffalo team that for the first time since 2007 won a playoff series, defeated the Boston Bruins in round one, pushed the Canadiens to the brink in round two. This Buffalo team wanted more. Disappointment overflowing post-game. Tage Thompson, the star forward of the Sabre program, saying we were feeling good going into overtime. Tons of confidence in the room. I think everyone in here felt like this was going to end differently and probably felt like we deserved a little better outcome. But that's the way it goes sometimes. We unfortunately take that taste with us into the summer and do something about it. The Buffalo community, of course, the Bills, Four Falls of Buffalo, very famous drought there. No Super Bowl victories, no Stanley Cup victories for the Sabres, and they're now 1-7 all time in game sevens. That is the second worst winning percentage in league history. Only the Ottawa Senators are worse at 0-6. Buffalo has also lost six of its past seven overtime playoff games, with their only win in game six of the 2011 Eastern Conference quarters against the Flyers. So Buffalo, you look at the history of this team, this was a very special season. And I know nobody wants to hear these moral victories the day after a year like we did with the Minnesota Wild. This was a nice year for them, a resurgent season. The future is bright. You feel like they're back on the right track. And that's where you feel like Buffalo's heading here after a very long drought. So long, 2007, the last time they won a playoff series. And the drought of even being in the postseason stretched from 2012 all the way to this year, 2026. That's pretty darn nuts. And Buffalo, certainly an inspiring future ahead, but not a great day as they drop a Game 7 in overtime. And they have not met the moment in the big moments lately in the home of the Sabres. Now, let's dive into the good, the bad, the ugly, our whip-around coverage of the sports world. Everything you may have missed, we'll hit that right now on a Tuesday edition of Overtime.
Who's been the problem child today? Displayed their ugly side. Whined a bit too much and is now setting a bad example. Bert is calling out today's headline makers with the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, as always, it is never a bad time to fire up the grill. Maybe this weekend during the severe thunderstorm warning would be a bad time, but generally speaking, never a bad time to hit the start button on the barbecue grill. And right now, Lewis can help you succeed with that. A Charbroil 5-burner grill, usually $500, is now just $249.97. Sprint over to Lewis. Nobody beats that price. Lewis Drug, Lewis Lawn and Garden, the sponsor of the good, the bad, and the ugly. Well, we've heard this before, but USC football is back. They're going to be really good this year, according to USC coach Lincoln Riley. He hasn't led the Trojans to the CFP, but he still knows what a playoff team looks like. He says he believes his team has all the ingredients to break through this upcoming season. Riley, who is 35-18 in Southern Cal after guiding Oklahoma to the CFP in each of his first four seasons as the Sooners coach, said the expectations are clear for year number five at SC. We absolutely have taken steps now, Riley said in an interview with ESPN and CBS at the Big Ten spring meetings. Honestly, now it's time to just go do it. It's time. The program is ready for it. USC Trojan football self-anointing themselves back on the map. Adam Scott is officially set for his 100th consecutive major appearance next month at the U.S. Open, which added 24 players to the field from the world ranking on Monday. 16 players also earned spots at qualifiers in England and Dallas. Scott effectively secured his spot among the top 60 in the world with a tie for fourth in the Cadillac Championship at Doral. He is number 49 in this week's ranking, which the U.S. Open uses to determine who avoids qualifying. Scott's streak, a remarkable one, 100 straight major appearances, began back in 2001 at the British Open, and he has not missed a major since, even going through U.S. Open qualifying when he wasn't exempt. It's the longest streak since Jack Nicklaus played 146 majors in a row from the 1962 Masters all the way through the 1998 U.S. Open. Well, bad news to pass along from the WNBA. Chicago Sky forward Ricky Jackson has been diagnosed with a torn left ACL, and she will miss the remainder of the WNBA season. Jackson had an MRI after suffering the injury in Sunday's win against Minnesota. The team announced on Tuesday she will have surgery on a date to be determined. Ricky Jackson going to miss the remainder of the year for the Chicago Sky. Well, there's always more to the story. And we told you on Friday about the storyline. Even Thursday, we told you about the storyline about Garrick Higo, the golfer who missed his tee time on the PGA Tour at a major. And he's reportedly split with his caddy, a move that came after the South African golfer was penalized two shots for being late to his opening round tee time at the PGA Championship just last week, Golf Week, citing Higo's agent, reported on Monday that Austin Gaugert is no longer on the bag of Higo, who will instead use Nick Cavendish Pell at this week's CJ Cup. Byron Nelson, Higo's tardiness Thursday at the PGA became a much talked about storyline at the season's second major championship. And lastly, the ugliest of ugly here. I can't believe upon reading this story that this is real, but also the initial storyline here is kind of a joke, really, I think personally, when it comes to the Brendan Sorsby situation. Texas Tech quarterback who has sought treatment for a gambling addiction has filed for an injunction against the NCAA on Monday, seeking his college eligibility for the upcoming season. The filing made in district court in Lubbock County, Texas, cites the NCAA's deeply hypocritical, quote, position on gambling and, quote, wholesale abandonment of its obligations and duties to promote the well-being of Sorsby. The NCAA prohibits student-athletes from betting on any NCAA-sanctioned sport, professional or collegiate. Penalties can include permanent ineligibility, especially in cases in which athletes wagered on their own team or manipulated their performance. Sorsby reportedly did wager on his Indiana Hoosiers back when he was young in his career and was not in the ballgame. But this is a very ugly situation and a surprising turn of events that Sorsby, A, would like to continue. B, thinks that he's going to win this case. I would be very surprised if there's any sort of win here for Brendan Sorsby. This is a very slippery slope, especially if, what if Brendan Sorsby wins here? The NCAA has to further abandon itself from the rules and regulations that we used to criticize them so heavily for having. And now we're saying, come on, where are the rules? This is out of control. In college football, Texas Tech's Brendan Sorsby filing for immediate eligibility for another year of college football. That article up, ESPN.com. Really interesting, surprising, and very much one to follow moving forward. Speaking of people to follow moving forward, you want your finger on the heartbeat of the Minnesota pro sports scene, even toe-dipping down into the Gophers and more. Darren Wolfson of KSTP is your guy. Wolfson will join us next to talk about the future of the Minnesota Wild and the Minnesota Timberwolves, both teams pretty darn good this year. Both teams in the mix in their conference in the postseason. But if I had to ask you to pick in the next 5 years, make a pick, a prognostication, one of these teams wins an NBA Finals or a Stanley Cup, which one would you choose over the next 5 years as the more likely to do so? That and more coming up next. Darren Wolfson of KSTP in the Twin Cities is our guest as we say so long to the Tuesday edition of Overtime after this on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.
Stream us online, stream us on the app. Streaming now, Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you, set to round out and wrap up a fun-filled Tuesday edition of Overtime, May the 19th. One of our favorites joins us now on the ESPN hotline, a guy who certainly has his finger on the pulse of Minnesota pro, prep, and college sports. Darren Wolfson of KSTP in the Twin Cities. Find the work, KSTP.com. D. Wolfson, KSTP on Twitter. Darren, always great to have you, my friend. How's your week treating you?
No complaints, Bert. I appreciate the kind words. How much money do I owe you for those kind words?
About $350 will do. $350 will be fine. Darren Wolfson of KSTP is our guest. Victor Wembanyama, man, how absurd was that last night?
That was absurd. In fact, I know somebody who hit on a Prize Picks bet of a double-double. I mean, literally, he had the double-double by what? About the 3 minute mark of the second quarter, 4 minute mark of the second quarter. I mean, the bet was just double double. Then you think about over 40 points, over 20 rebounds. He is absolutely absurd. And so when tying it to the local bunch, it's like, okay, moving forward, not only do you need to find a way, Bert, to overcome the Oklahoma City Thunder, but for the foreseeable future, how exactly are you overcoming the Spurs as well? I still think the Spurs Thunder series will end up going the distance. Maybe I'll be painfully wrong on that, but I just don't think either team is winning in five or six games. I think it will go the distance. But man alive, when thinking about the next few years, outside of the Wolves getting their wish of moving to the Eastern Conference sooner than I think that will happen. I mean, to me, that's, what, 3-4 years out when expansion takes place. I just don't know if you're Tim Connelly, if you're the Wolves, how exactly you overcome those two teams.
Certainly well said there. Darren Wolfson of KSTP in the Twin Cities is our guest. After the dust has settled on the Timberwolves' exit six-game series against the aforementioned Spurs, what do you think about, obviously, the Anthony Edwards handshake situation ruffled a lot of feathers, but as this roster sits here now, the offseason questions ahead, how do you kind of assess where the Timberwolves are and where they could be coming up as they get ready for the 2026-2027 season not too long from now?
Well, I mean, I'll start with Friday night. I was there. I wasn't bothered in the moment watching Ant do what he did. The more I thought about it, okay, I understand the reaction. I was more bothered by the Julius Randle effort or lack thereof on Friday night. I thought Jay Williams, who does – to me, great work for ESPN. He was on First Take on Monday. I thought just visually, he laid out the evidence how often Randle literally didn't follow the ball. Stephon Castle blowing by him multiple times early in the game. Truthfully, Bert, I was way more bothered by the effort we saw from Julius Randle with the season on the line compared to Ant going to shake some hands, hug some folks with 8.5 minutes to go. I mean, I don't know how to quantify. Like, was Ant at 65%, 70%? I know with those two knees, he wasn't anywhere near 100%. I will never question Ant's competitive spirit. I think about him willing the Wolves to victory in game four. I don't have a problem with that. Now, moving forward, I bring up Randall's name. To me, he's front and center when it comes to trade talks. Like, to me, you're not firing the coach. There's a reason why Chris Finch met with us on Saturday. He has 2 years left on his contract at big money, by the way. I don't think ownership has an appetite to cut Chris Finch a big fat check to go away. And I wouldn't do that anyway. I think he's a really good coach. I don't think he's the best coach in the league, but I think Chris Finch is fully capable. This roster needs work. Think about last summer, chasing Kevin Durant, then chasing Giannis in February. I mean, to me, you could still chase those guys. Like, do the Rockets think about trading Kevin Durant this summer? And to me, it's a foregone conclusion. The Bucks are going to trade Giannis. It's a matter of where, not if. So I think the Wolves will re-engage the Bucks at some point. Maybe they already have with the Combine last week in Chicago. So many executives were in Chicago for the Combine. So, you know, inevitably there were face-to-face conversations. So if it didn't happen last week, I imagine it'll happen soon that the Wolves re-engage the Bucks on Giannis.
Darren, I'm sure that nobody is saying tear it down to the studs for the T-Wolves. They've got a lot of studs on the roster for sure. Ayudosunmu certainly feels like a piece to build around. Anthony Edwards is the piece to build around. But when it comes to Randle and other names that could be jettisoned via trade, etc., what are the names to know? What kind of fills up the offseason checklist for Minnesota in that regard?
Well, I mean, you bring up Ayodele's name. He's an unrestricted free agent. What does that new contract look like? I mean, undoubtedly, the Wolves, when they made the deal for Ayo, Bert, in February, the idea was they want him here long term. But what exactly does that contract look like? It's not like the Wolves, and I get it, have an appetite to be above the second apron or into the second apron. So they only have so much flexibility. Now, you think about Dante DiVincenzo entering a contract year. We know he's going to miss most, if not all, of next season, recovering from the Achilles tear. Could you use his contract, an expiring contract, in a trade? I mean, to me, Bert, like, outside of Ant, can we sit here and say anyone else is untouchable? Like, I love Jaden McDaniels. I have a man crush on Jaden McDaniels. But if you can acquire Giannis and you have to part with Jaden McDaniels, wouldn't you do that? Now, I get it. You look to trade Julius Randle more than anyone. Then perhaps if you bring in Giannis, I don't know how Giannis and Rudy Gobert would coexist. So I would imagine Rudy Gobert also goes out either in that same transaction or a different transaction. But I'm just saying, outside of Anthony Edwards, and I get it, Naz Reid, cult hero here in town, right? Wolves fans love Naz Reid, the longest tenured Timberwolf. He's been here since 2019. I understand it, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Naz Reid is untouchable. It's Anthony Edwards. Otherwise, to me, literally everything is on the table. But if you're asking me, like, if you had to bet on one guy being traded this summer, it's absolutely Julius Randle.
Well, there you go on the Minnesota Timberwolves. Darren, I'm going to do a little hypothetical. I know you and I bond over things like this, but if I were to tell you there's a world in the next 5 years that either the Wild or the Wolves win a title, which team are you more likely to say that's the team that'll do it and here's why? Are you more bullish on the Wild? And again, a lot of this is circumstantial and what's going on, the Spurs, the Thunder, and then the obstacles out in the Western Conference of the NHL. But what team do you have more confidence in over the next 5 years to get the thing done and win a title for the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul?
I mean, Bert, I figured the answer has to be the Wild, right? But I mean, I'm bullish on both front offices. Like, I think about Bill Guerin, his staff, Tim Connolly, his staff. Like, those are really, really good front offices. But I suppose when thinking about the Western Conference and the NHL, okay, like, it's Colorado. You need to overcome the Avalanche for the next few years. In the NBA, it's two teams. It's the Thunder and the Spurs. So I guess I'll take my chances on the Wild overcoming Colorado versus the Wolves overcoming two teams. I do think they'll end up extending Quinn Hughes. Like, Quinn Hughes, I get it, is heading into a contract year. I think he likes it here. My sense is the Wild will come to a contract extension agreement with Quinn Hughes at some point this summer. The question is, can the Wild come up with a number one center? Like, can they, I don't think this is possible, but like, do the Maple Leafs move off Austin Matthews? Mm-hmm. Or maybe more realistically, Bert, do the Blues move off of Robert Thomas? He's 26. Like, to me, the Blues should keep Robert Thomas, but the Wild still have a bunch of really good prospects. They have a goalie they could move in theory. Now, Philip Gustafson, I was at Bill Guerin's season-ending news conference on Monday just to wrap up the season. Head coach John Hines met with us yesterday as well. But he told us, we didn't know this until he told us yesterday, that Philip Gustafson needs to undergo some sort of hip surgery. And he wasn't sure if Gus would be ready for training camp. So to me, that hurts Gus's trade value this summer. But if there was a large deal to be had, would you end up moving one of the two goalies, Philip Gustafson or Jesper Wallstedt? Like, if you can get a true number one center, but you have to part with one of the goalies plus a few prospects and or draft picks, like, why wouldn't you do it? The Wild still have some salary cap flexibility, even with Kirill Kaprizov's monster extension kicking in next year. Then when thinking about a Quinn Hughes extension, they still have enough salary cap flexibility. So to answer your question, I still think it's the Wild over the Wolves, but I'm telling you, like, should I bet against Anthony Edwards? Like, he's not even 25 yet, right? Like, he would have been all NBA this year if he would have been, you know, in enough games. He didn't play the 65 games, so he wasn't eligible for all NBA, but we're talking about an all NBA players. So should I bet against Anthony Edwards? I guess if you're asking me the question, Bert, I'll say the Wild, but I still feel really good about the Wolves. I just feel like it's just tougher to overcome the two teams compared to the Wild overcoming the one team.
It certainly is a logjam right now in the Western Conference of the NBA. Game one in the bag. Spurs double overtime over the Thunder last night, 122-115. Latest and greatest pro sports in the Twin City news, all the way down to prep and, of course, college sports. Darren Wolfson of KSTP, an elite follow on Twitter always, DWolfson KSTP. Lastly, before we cut you loose, pretty big news, I'd say, around the Minnesota Twins today, an update on Royce Lewis, and also an injury concern for another big personality, big player for Minnesota. Give us the latest there on those two situations for the Twins, Darren.
Yeah, General Manager Jeremy Zoll will meet with us in about an hour, hour and 10 minutes. But yeah, the news is, I mean, to me, the headline is Ryan Jeffers, catcher. To me, on an all-star type path, like, Ryan Jeffers has been really good. Good for him, by the way, in a contract year. Like, to me, if I'm the Twins, I would have already extended Ryan Jeffers. Easier said than done, but to me, I want Ryan Jeffers as my number one catcher for the next handful of years. But last night, eighth inning, you know, he's in the batter's box and something happened, foul ball, but then it was a couple pitches later, he came out, he ended up fracturing his left hammock bone. And so that's like a 2-month-ish recovery. Like, Ryan Jeffers won't be back anytime soon. Now, maybe it's 6 weeks or 7 weeks, not eight, but maybe it's 9 or 10 weeks. Like, it shouldn't be a season-ending injury, but Ryan Jeffers, Bert, is going to miss a good amount of time. I guess co-headline would be, for the first time in many years, Royce Lewis is being sent down. Mm-hmm. And, like, I get it. Like, he was good opening day until April 9th. It was April 9th. He suffers a knee injury, goes on the injured list. Upon coming back, you look at his numbers, Bert. He is striking out more than ever. He reworked his swing in the winter. I feel like it looked good. Like opening day was what, March 28th? March 28th until the knee injury on April 9th. I get it. It's a 1.5 week sample size, but for those first, whatever it was, 10, 11, 12 games, Royce Lewis looked really good, or at least pretty good. Then he comes back from the knee injury and he just hasn't been the same. I mean, he has multiple options left on his contract. So to me, it was the right thing to do. Like, there's no way you could keep trotting him out there. Like, you know, anybody listening, or if you saw the games over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, those were the most non-competitive at-bats I've ever seen from Royce Lewis. Striking out ninth inning on Saturday, and his first two at-bats on Sunday, strikeout, strikeout, plus he committed a costly error over the weekend. Like, they had to make the move on Royce Lewis. I feel bad for both. Like, both guys are A-plus dudes. Now, Ryan Jeffers will be fine. Like, to me, he's going to strike gold whenever free agency happens, because to me, it still looks like we're headed for a work stoppage in December. But whenever free agency gets off the ground in baseball, if the Twins don't sign Jeffers to an extension before then, I think Jeffers will be okay. Royce Lewis, I don't know. Like, some of the things he said about, you know, thinking that maybe the Twins want him to fail, I wonder if Royce Lewis, his best path forward is eventually being traded, and he needs a fresh start in a new organization.
And Royce Lewis optioned to AAA as of today. 2017 number one overall pick, hitting just 163 this year. That's Darren Wolfson of KSTP. Appreciate the updates and the conversation as always, my friend. We'll do it again soon. Thanks so much as always.
You got it, Bert. Always appreciate the conversation.
All right. That's the great Darren Wolfson of KSTP. Still owes me my $350. We'll wait for that. I'm sure I'll keep on waiting there. But Darren Wolfson, an elite guest here on this show, this airwaves, and certainly the one-stop shop to go to. Latest updates on the Twin Cities pro sports scene, also prep sports, and of course the Gophers and more in the college level. Great stuff there. Again, Royce Lewis demoted. Ryan Jeffers going to be out for a while. We'll get you an update as the official timetable comes out, I'm sure, in the days and weeks ahead. That's the show on a Tuesday, and we will talk to you tomorrow when the middle of the week Wednesday edition rolls around already at 11. We'll talk to you then coming up tomorrow when the next edition of Overtime rolls around right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.